Good morning. My name is Darrell Gunter, and I am your host on Leadership, where we explore all facets of leadership. Today, our studio guest is Eric Frankel, who is president of Frankel Corporate Consulting. Eric, thank you for joining us this week on the topic of leadership and how the individual can be a better leader. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Pleasure to be here, Darrell, and always enjoy coming to Seton Hall.
Oh, great. You know, Eric, your program, this program, is 29 minutes long. However, you have a program that can boast a change in 10 minutes. Can you tell us about this 10-minute program?
Absolutely. I've been in my own business for 15 years, Darrell. And the business has been predicated on people and their ability to be able to make significant impact in their organizations, in their professional life. And as it relates to their organization, or it relates to when they're looking for a job, every time I sit with someone for an hour, at the end of that session, I want to be able to give them guidance, meaningful guidance in terms of the way they convey information, the way they communicate, the way they hold themselves up, what they have to say, because a lot of what they have to say is very meaningful and very important. But it's that 5% or that 10% or that 20% of what they're communicating that needs to be tweaked. And the 10 minutes to change program is the 10 minutes that I convey to that business professional at the end of the session that allows them to be able to provide much greater impact and insight in terms of the way they come across to the individual in front of them. So it has significant impact in terms of the way their peers perceive them, the way their manager perceives them, the way their organization perceives them, or in the case of a job search, the way others perceive them to see if they want to buy who that person is.
And how about the way that they perceive themselves?
Confidence. that is the universal, I think, quest for what we all are looking for. We wake up some day feeling good and eternally confident, and everyone seems like, you know, sometimes people seem like they have just a world of confidence that it comes to them, yet that's not the case. Having confidence and being able to feel good and understand exactly what your role is in a particular situation or in an organization very much impacts how you perceive
things. That's a very key statement. What is your role in your specific organization? I have found that over time, a lot of times people do not have a firm understanding about their role. Sometimes they see their role more than what it is, or sometimes they see their role less than what it is. What has been your experience?
It can lead to significant frustration if people's roles are not clarified by that particular supervisor, by the manager, by the organization. It can really have a significant negative impact. It can lead to people being frustrated and people leaving, even though they had significant ability to be able to impact that particular company. It's very important that an individual who feels like they can do a lot of good in a company and they're not getting the proper clarification, seek out guidance from others around them and come up with their own ideas and suggest certain areas, not too aggressively, but appropriately to be able to really make sure that you are clarifying and making the proper progress in your particular role and the roles of others. So collaboratively, you can be doing great benefit for the company as a whole.
Yes, collaborative, very important. You know, the Successories, the company that makes all those motivational posters?
Yes.
They have one poster, which I love, and that's the one with the folks on the crew boat, where they're in the boat and all the oars are moving in the right direction. Often I find that when people are not doing what they're supposed to be doing, that there is a void of strategy. There is a void of direction. There is a void within their job description about what they're supposed to be doing. When someone that you're coaching, you're working on, you clearly see that the individual wants to do the right thing, but they're not getting the right direction. How do you coach them to really address the situation in a professional, productive manner with their boss?
I have an advantage. I'm on the outside looking in. I can tell people what they need to hear and convey it in a way that they will stand up and pay attention. Too often when they are working with people that are close to them on a day-to-day basis, they're going to be much more sensitive to what that individual says, much more defensive, much more likely to reel backwards instead of forwards. When I convey it to them in an honest way, I develop rapport. I help them to understand why they need to change their behavior, how they need to go about and change their behavior, and make it practical in the fact that if they do this, the benefits and the rewards are going to be significant for them to be able to overcome certain stress obstacles that they're experiencing and the stress obstacles that may be around them for others that are working with them. It can have a significant impact.
And these are tools and techniques in a very constructive way that they can use in their personal lives as well.
Absolutely. I think personalized is the key. We are so different as individuals. You know, you, you can't say, hey, I know that type of person over there. He's a XYZ or an ABC. Right. We all are very unique. We all have our own way of looking at things. And in terms of personal life and business life, they all kind of mesh into one. You know, we're working 40, 50, 60 hours a week, whatever the number may be, and what we experience when we go home at night, when we spend time on the weekends with our family. I think it's very important to have quality interpersonal relationships, both out of work and in work. And you've got to work very hard to make sure that even the people that you have sometimes a difficult time getting along with, you work extra hard to make sure that they don't necessarily know that.
You know, recently there was an individual that I was working with, and it was a particular decision that he didn't like that came down from the corporate office. And he proceeded to use some profanity. And I said to him, I said, well, you know, so-and-so, I know you're upset, and I know you don't mean that towards me, but as long as we're talking, let's keep it professional. Individual said to me, well, I'm just keeping it, I'm just telling you, this is how it is, this is how I feel. And I said, have you ever thought about the impact that you may have on other people that you talk to in this same particular tone, who maybe don't know you as well as I may know you?
You have the ability to be able to take that insight and information and how we talk to you and be able to try to help him and not have it affect you in the relationship. But certainly, one out of every three people, or perhaps more, that he talks to and communicates in that manner are going to be reeling and are going to have significant negative perceptions towards that person. It's going to be much more difficult for them to be
and
managed.
And towards the company.
Absolutely.
Because maybe they might see this might be part of the culture at this particular company.
Sensitivity is a huge obstacle in business. And if someone even perceives that someone's looked at them the wrong way, said something to them the wrong way, and sometimes you're not even aware that it's happening, they can go into a tailspin for weeks at a time. And next thing you know, they may be spreading the negativity towards others, and it can have some real negative repercussions.
Absolutely.
So, like you said before, there's never a place for profanity.
And when you think about the 10-minute program, outline it for me. I come to you, I say, Eric, I need help. So how does the 10-minute program work? It's not over in 10 minutes. So obviously there's a back and forth. Share with me how the program works.
The 10-minute program is typically bought by corporations, bought by corporations that have two end goals in mind. Number one is they downsize they have layoffs. No company wants to get involved in that particular situation, but they have no choice in the matter. So in those scenarios, they may use outplacement agencies who have, you know, very good roles in the world, but they're very expensive. So companies these days are looking to provide meaningful guidance to their displaced employees for many reasons. Number one, it's the right thing to do.
Absolutely.
And number two, they want to buy goodwill from the remaining team that they have within their organization. So this particular product, 10 Minutes to Change, is a great way to be able to provide meaningful guidance to the job seeker, the professional who's who's reeling, who has some problems, who has some issues, and needs to get their head on straight and be able to figure out exactly what direction they need to take to be able to find a job efficiently and effectively and have confidence to be able to do so.
And how does it work? How many sessions do you do? Is it 30-minute sessions, hour sessions?
It's one-hour session. Companies can buy multiple sessions, but one session, they fill out an information sheet in advance. That's reviewed by myself. In the case of a job seeker, it would be a resume and a cover letter as well. They will then take 60 minutes, spend it with me, and at the end of a 45-minute, 50-minute interview-type session, I will then convey 10 minutes that will be disseminated to them that's valuable information as far as specifically what they need to do to be able to get a job effectively. And it's all downloaded onto an audio CD. So they can use this, download it onto their iPod for ongoing motivation and clarity in terms of exactly what they need to do.
You know, it's I'm glad you mentioned that, because that is so important. It's not a one-shot deal. The individual really has some work to do. They really have to put some effort into making these changes. They just don't meet with you and go, I'm going to see you know, Superman, Eric, and Eric's going to make me, you know, really great. And then after that, I'm going to go conquer the world. But there's really some hard work to do after that. And the work is really on the individual employee. Is that correct?
That is correct. The employee's got the work to do. They've got to put on their sales cap because they have to be able to differentiate themselves in terms of the skills they possess.
Right.
They've got to be able to understand and focus and accentuate what they do exceptionally. All of those, you know, they need to have clear understanding. You can't look for a job in 2009 or 2010 the same way you look for a job in 2004.
Right.
It's a whole different realm. And that's one of the reasons why people are struggling. The demand and the supply is just significantly out of sync right now. But there are plenty of companies that need and want to hire good people that have the right fit and personality in their organization.
So when you look at this program, as you indicated, this program is for companies that unfortunately are downsizing due to the economy. Do you have companies that are not downsizing who say, you know what, I got a group of folks who are really good, but I want to make my team better. I want to make them sharper. Do you find them reaching out to your
Absolutely, Darrell. Leadership development is, you know, I think for the last 10 years, 15 years, you know, we hear about human resources, we hear about human capital, we hear about organizational development.
Right.
All of that is centered around leaders and future leaders and succession planning.
Right.
And companies have embraced the concept of coaching to a great degree.
Yes. I remember in 2003, I had an executive coach, and I was told by one of the leading executive search firms that, oh, you don't want to say that you have an executive coach because people are going to think there's something wrong with you. But in Europe, it was to have an executive coach was like a prize. And then 2004, 2005, it became the next big thing. People were asking, hey, Darrell, how did you get this executive coach? It's expensive. You must be valued. So I said, of course I am. You know,
it depends on the perception. I mean, certainly, I think a lot more people these days are going to recognize, Darrell, that the fact that you work with an executive coach is a sign that you are constantly looking to improve and looking to, you know, bring more benefit and knowledge to yourself for the benefit of, you know, how you present yourself day to day and how you move forward. But from a leadership development perspective, the 10 Minutes program is a way for companies. Companies are focused on two major things, I think, right now. They're focused on continuing to provide the right guidance to be able to develop their future leaders, to be able to make sure their managers are managing effectively and efficiently and collaborating appropriately. And they need to invest in them on a continual basis. But when it comes to cost, companies are looking to control costs. And they're also looking for efficiency. You know, people don't have a lot of time, so they're looking to kind of scale down in terms of the amount of time that some of these external training programs might develop. So the 10 Minutes to Change concept, as it relates to leadership development, is a great alternative, a low-cost alternative to coaching. It's a lot more succinct in terms of the fact that you can bring 15 leaders together over the course of a 2 or 3 day period, have them go through this program. You can do it once, you can have significant impact, and if you like what the results are and the benefits and the value received, you can do the same thing again 6 months later or a year later. It's not an ongoing scenario.
But how do you measure success with this program, or any program?
Success is measured because there's an information sheet that is not only completed by the individual in advance, but their manager also needs to give some guidance in terms of maybe certain obstacles that some of the key employees are experiencing, some of the humps that they would like them to be able to get over that they're having a little bit of a struggle with. So when I get done with each of the employees in terms of speaking to them, it's very important for me to go back and bring up two or three important goals, important achievements that we've talked about during the course of that particular session. So the 10-minute audio CD is the kind of the private the private property of the individual.
Right.
You certainly need to be able to relay
it back. Is that the Jahari's window verbalized where they can see the side that they don't see, but they can hear and say, you know what, I really need to address this.
No doubt. And it's personalized as it relates to them. It's not a it's not a generic type of scenario where I say, hey, you gotta, you know, you gotta set goals and you gotta, you know, you gotta focus on what you can do better 20 minutes every single day. And this is very specific to what that individual with that personality is all about.
And what happens when you have the situation where you have a group of folks for leadership development, but you find that the leadership of the home office, corporate, has not really established a clear strategy where someone's job description or their performance objective setting is out of sync with the strategy. So they're saying strategy over here, but in the other hand, the performance objectives don't match, and that creates a very dysfunctional organization.
It does.
How do you address that?
I address it because, you know, I've got to be able to take the key business strategic points out of the 15 people that I'm seeing and be able to relay it back to the executive team members that have hired me to begin with and say, these are going to be challenges and these are going to be issues. And I think a lot of it has to do with how much is invested and how much human resources is valued. In some organizations, the human resource function can be a wonderful part of the strategic focus in the company in terms of how you're going to be able to retain, recruit the best people and be able to make sure that they are continuing to escalate as you want the organization to do. In other companies, the human resource area is kind of forgotten about. It's just a, you know, it's an overhead.
Right.
And that is, I think, not going to be strategically part of the same mix in terms of what the 10 Minutes to Change program is. But you know, part of my end goal and value is certainly to be able to communicate to the organization what they need to do to be able to align strategy with what the tactical focus is here.
Last year, I attended an executive summit. Outsell is one of the leading research research companies in the information business. And for this particular signature event that they had someone from Spencer Stuart speak. And the gentleman was talking on the topic of HR and the CEOs. And one of the key questions that he asked, how many of the CEOs in the audience had their HR VP reporting into them? What percentage do you think said the HR reported into them?
15%.
Exactly.
Lucky and, guess.
I mean, it was 10-15%. And the key thing he said to them, you're making a huge mistake because you think that HR is a bothersome thing. This is your human capital that you really need to manage effectively because it will save you thousands, millions of dollars down the road. Because if you don't manage your capital assets correctly or somebody makes a mistake and you get into a lawsuit, it can be quite costly. And do you see that when you come across in your
all the time? I counsel companies that are, typically smaller in size, anywhere between $5 million and $300 million. A lot of the companies, once they get to 75 employees or 100 employees, say, we need an HR head. But they want the HR head to report through operations, or they want them to report through the CFO.
Right.
I'm a classically trained CPA.
Okay.
I've kind of gotten away from that a little bit. I embrace sales and marketing, but HR is so important and it's so valuable. And some of the great HR people that I've seen out there that really can make a big difference in the organization, they have their hands tied if they're not reporting directly to the CEO in the organization.
Mm-hmm.
I agree 100%.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when you think about the key traits that a leader should have, what are those key traits that a leader should have?
The key traits a leader should have, there's a lot of different adjectives you can come up with. But I like to think, number one, that being yourself, being genuine, just a likability about you.
Mm-hmm.
People perceive in a leader, they want to say, this person's being real on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
I can give you an example. You know, Sarah Jessica Parker is someone that is very real. When I look at her, and a lot of people may disagree with me, that is an area that is just emanates from her on a day-to-day basis, and it's what made the Sex and the City show so popular. Being unique. You don't want someone who is always predictable. You want someone who just every single day you're not quite sure what they're going to say and what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
People always tell me that, Eric, you're so unique. My wife tells me that every single day. It's a great trait to have. I like that.
That's awesome.
I guess it can be negative unique or positive unique. But
it should be positive unique.
always keeping people hopping. I think that's a sign of a great leader. A great leader commands respect.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go into a baseball example. You know, Joe Torre, I don't know him on a personal level, but you look at him, you watch him, and even though I'm not a Yankee fan, what he did with the Yankees over the course of the years, the second he left them, the fact that they did not make the playoffs, and here he is two straight years with a different team making the playoffs again.
Exactly.
14 straight years. What an accomplishment.
Right.
He commands respect of multimillionaires
and
certainly a clubhouse that is always not in formulated mode. He's got a lot of challenges on his hand.
Before we got started, we were talking about baseball, and I'm a Mets fan. And you asked me, did I not like the Yankees? I said, no, I respect the Yankees because of what they represent and the class that they bring to baseball. Even though they're the best team that money can buy, as a good friend Bill McCarlo would say, But I found that the Yankees during Joe Torre's day, there was no negative headlines in the press about them. They came to work, they did their job, and they went home, and they won quite a few World Series. So there's a lot to be said about respect in the locker room.
He had a wonderful, calm demeanor, and he won the respect of everyone, the press, mm-hmm. the players, and really everyone around him. Being bold, mm-hmm. You've got to be able to have the feel that this person is going to be able to take us places from a competitive perspective that others can't. And I don't think being bold is necessarily, you can look at one individual and say, that is a bold person.
Mm-hmm.
I think bold is about mm-hmm. the specific actions that people take moment to moment or day to day. I can do something bold tomorrow. Someone else can do something bold next week. But I think it's kind of a collection of work that mm-hmm. someone is making bold moves that strategically are going to be able to get us to newer heights and grander heights and be able to grow, especially in this type of climate that we're experiencing
right
now.
If I may share an example of boldness, I used to work for Elsevier, the world's largest scientific publisher. And at the time, we had a CEO named Derek Honk, who's now the CEO of Springer. He went to Japan for a meeting, and he was talking to the Japanese librarians there. And one Japanese librarian said, why is it that your back file content is not online? All of the journal content should be online. And Derek said, is it important? He took a poll in the audience. Audience said yes. Derek came back and said, we're going to load up all of the back files going back to volume one, issue one, no discussion, decision made.
Wonderful.
And that revolutionized the whole industry. The whole industry all of a sudden said, oh, we got to load up back files. And folks are using that research. So that was one example of a leader just saying, no, this is very obvious. We don't need discussion. We need to do it.
It's amazing. Every time a new idea is created, new innovations created, you say, why didn't I think of that? That's so obvious. That's so easy. And being bold is being able to not only see, that the opportunity exists, but being able to take action on it.
Right.
Action's not taken.
It's taken a walk off of the beaten path, so to speak. Walking to your own drummer, as long as it's a good drummer.
Absolutely. The last is take risks. Mm-hmm. We always hear entrepreneurs, we always hear, higher level executives take risks. Not so much the case in every situation. I think about what happened in Albany a couple of months ago, and I think a lot of us don't even know what happened in Albany. It was almost a little bit secretive. But what happened there seemed to be the result.
You're talking about the state of New York government.
The state of New York government. Yes, thank you. In politics.
Yes.
But it seemed like there was disarray there because a couple of Democrats ended up siding with Republicans or vice versa. You just got the feeling in that particular case that partisan politics were not occurring there for a certain period of time. And credit to whoever it was that was taking the risk and saying, I'm not going to put up with this anymore. That's the type of attitude and the type of demeanor that we need a little bit more of in the government world. It's what we expect and need mm-hmm. from our business leaders every single day.
Absolutely.
And it's the type of attitude that is going to be able to get us out of this recession to where we can start moving our economy forward in a very positive direction. Innovation, taking risks, mm-hmm. incredibly important.
Let's talk about risks, taking risk. What is the not the magic formula, but the best formula for taking risk? Because you have folks who take risk and they're successful. You have other folks who take risk and they're not successful. What are some of those attributes of taking risk? What are some of the key things that a leader needs to do in taking this decision to take that risk?
I think calculated risks. Mm-hmm. When I look at the best entrepreneurs I've worked with, there's people that are very, very frugal. They don't want to spend any money. They don't want to invest in their company. They don't want to, they're always too frugal to be able to really move things forward. Then there's other people that are incredibly risk-taking, just anything that comes about. It's almost like they're excited. Maybe those are the people that like going to the $500 tables at the Borgata in Atlantic City. It's certainly not me. I don't think necessarily a trait that you want from your top leader.
Right.
But if you are conservatively frugal or cautiously mm-hmm. frugal, you are going to weigh each decision. You have all these ideas in your mind. You have people around you that can provide to you the right type of information financially. Marketing. You've laid out the proper research information.
Mm-hmm.
And you can then kind of formulate a best opportunity.
Best worst case scenario.
Best worst case scenario
mm-hmm.
for what is going to happen in a course of 3 months, in the course of 6 months, in the course of 2 years, and make your best judgment based upon that. There's only so much room for so many decisions, and you want to be able to make the best decisions in the right amount of time and recognize that every decision you make is mm-hmm. not going to be right, but you have to learn from those decisions, and that will make you much more cautious and a much better risk taker going forward.
And when we think about leadership, and this program is about leadership, and you're a small business man, and you've taken a risk and it doesn't work, I have seen some business people take it out on the coworkers instead of saying, well, we took this decision because of these reasons. It didn't work. Now let's determine why it didn't work and let's go forward. What has been your experience? Have you seen the negative side of folks taking risks and then not taking ownership of that risk?
Absolutely. And it's always the fault of the person at the top. I mean, and I really mean that genuinely. Mm-hmm. The person at the top is accountable. The person underneath them is certainly accountable for certain facets of making that decision work. But if the decision blows up and it doesn't work, the person at the top has to look at themselves and then in terms of the pieces that maybe can be corrected and moved along in a positive direction. But if you lose the respect and you don't challenge yourself in terms of taking ownership and being accountable for that decision not working, it's going to blow up in your face again the next time around.
And then you're going to lose the confidence of the folks who are working with you. They're not going to, that trust is not going to be the same.
Trust is gone.
And trust is very important. Trust is so important. Is there a particular case study you can share with us without divulging anyone's name, without divulging any confidences, that the 10-minute program worked very well?
Sure. I'm going to take one that applies to leadership development.
Sure.
Had a situation where a woman was a operations leader with a very prominent Fortune 500 organization. And she had been there for about 8 or 10 years, and there's a lot of challenges she had in terms of balancing work and family, which is something I think a lot of people can relate there and relate to in the audience. She decided time to look elsewhere. I need to get a corporate Monday to Friday job. And she had a lot of different skills in finance, skills in operations, very strong manager. And she took a look at a couple of different situations. She got a couple of offers. And she kept coming back to me and saying, Eric, can you help me out in terms of deciphering through this particular situation? I think I'm very interested in it. And what she learned is she learned the questions you want to ask at the point of the offer that will clarify if this is going to be the right situation for
right.
you. A lot of companies, when they're recruiting people, say, I wish I knew that about the person during the course of the hire. So I helped her in one case. I said, you need to ask this company, they're a smaller organization, if they're going to share financial information with you.
Right.
They would not share financial information with you, with her. As a matter of fact, they were reeling when she asked that information. They said, no one's ever asked that before. How can you ask that? We would never share financial information with anyone.
Right.
And this is the same company that wanted to incentivize her based upon the way their revenues grow, the way profitability is going to be. So clearly they were saying one thing, but acting in a totally different capacity.
Right.
So the 10 Minutes to Change program allowed her in the end run to make decisions that she decided not to accept two job offers that she received, ended up staying with her same company in a different capacity. She's now a marketing manager within the organization and happier than she's ever been before, and working in a Monday to Friday capacity that allows her to have the work-life balance.
Yes.
So she's been able to kind of gain perspective.
Now, isn't that a win-win? And that shows good leadership on a part of her company as well, because here you have a valued employee who needs a different lifestyle change on the job. And it's a job that will fit what she needs. And they recognize her key talents. And they said, you know what? We don't want to lose her. Let's find something that works for her and works for us.
No doubt. You know, it says a lot about the company. The company is a very progressive company. If I shared their name, we would all say, oh, that's a progressive company.
Absolutely.
You know, their products are progressive, and they are very admirable for the win-win situation they created there.
Absolutely. Well, Eric, we're almost at the close of our session today. Is there a particular book that you can share with the audience that will touch upon leadership in the topic that we discussed today?
I'm going to go back to one of my favorite books. I think it was written in 1938 or 1940. Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Ah, a favorite of my father's.
As basic can be, but something that allowed me to escalate myself from a guy who didn't know a lot when I first started my business to what I perceive to be the most valuable trait in the world, which is becoming a good listener and really be focused on the other person in front of me.
That's going to be on our bestseller list on our website. And also,